evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, coming to you live from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan. This Wednesday, September 11, 2024, a U.S. Congresswoman calls for more support to the people of Sudan.
And if we are signaling that it is not a priority to us, then it then sort of signals to the rest of the world not to take it seriously. And we know with forces like China and Russia working to compete against us and to dismantle democracies, we know that there are other agents and actors playing in this war as well.
And IGAD's special envoy for Sudan says the regional bloc is working to bring peace to the Sudanese people.
1 month later, when the war broke out, IGAD participated in the Jeddah meetings as a co-chair. And since that, IGAD is still continuing with the effort to bring about peace in Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. U.S. Congresswoman Sidney Kamlaga Dove is leading 50 members of the Congress who are urging the Biden administration to scale up humanitarian aid in Sudan in the backdrop of a famine declared in Zamzam camp for internally displaced persons. The lawmakers sent a letter to Secretary of State Antony Blinken and USAID administrator calling for greater resources and staffing for the Office of the Special Envoy to Sudan. The group says that move reflects urgent need to bring an end to the conflict in Sudan.
I'm just heartened to hear that, but I understand why they would say it. And that is exactly why I wrote this letter and encouraged my colleagues to sign on. 50 Democratic members of Congress signed on with me to ask this administration to do more. We want them to raise the awareness of this war, get Secretary Blinken out in front. We want to rally our international partners to also take this more seriously and pledge more dollars to help with the support around humanitarian aid delivery. Because if we are not taking the lead on this, then it will signal to the rest of the world that this is not important. And of course it is. And we must find different mechanisms of getting humanitarian aid to the Sudanese. Using the same traditional methods is obviously proving to be ineffective, and Sudan cannot stand to wait much longer for help.
You're calling for an urgent humanitarian intervention. Why?
Because people are dying. In the next 4 months, it is estimated that 2.5 million people will die. Famine has erupted. Deaths are happening every day. And the warring parties are working together, in my opinion, to prevent the delivery of humanitarian aid. It is unconscionable and it is inhumane.
And talk to me about the international attention. Are you getting that?
No.
Why?
You're not getting. You know, I have my own suspicions that people just don't care or don't respect the continent of Africa. I think that is wildly ignorant. I wonder how many people even know where Sudan is.
You're talking about the American people.
And talking about American people. And if we are signaling that it is not a priority to us, then it then sort of signals to the rest of the world not to take it seriously. And we know with forces like China and Russia working to compete against us and to dismantle democracies, we know that there are other agents and actors playing in this war as well. That is why it is incumbent upon us to take the lead and call for more aid and call for more discussions. And actually, I'm hoping that the vote that happens today in the UN will be successful in terms of extending this embargo, extending sanctions, and putting some teeth to those sanctions.
Talk to me about America's foreign policy and its resources. Where does it go? I mean, I know that the war in Ukraine and Gaza is you know, shifting attention. But talk to me about the resources.
Well, I really applaud the Biden administration for saying no to isolationism. We know that the prior administration did not care about Africa at all. And I think we suffered and the world suffered as a result. So thankfully, we have an administration that is trying to engage. They finally got a special envoy to the Sudan, you know, a year too late. But he needs to be supported with more resources and more staff. It is very important that Secretary Blinken show his face more on the continent and remind folks that this administration cares. I am certainly hoping that we can have a reauthorization of AGOA, but we also must continue to talk about the conflicts that are happening and the impact that they have on their regions and their neighbors.
The UN made an appeal for humanitarian assistance. They were projecting $2.7 billion, and only 37% of that was received. What should be done to get pledges from donor countries, U.S. allies, and the international community, if you like?
It is important to give more, but it's more important that the money that you are pledging actually gets to where it's intended to go. It's one thing to make a pledge, but if those resources are thwarted because you have bad actors keeping humanitarian aid from the people and the civilians that need it the most, then it doesn't matter. You can have as much money as you want in your bank account, but if you actually can't get access to it, it doesn't do anyone any good.
And let's talk about the instrument of diplomacy, sanctions. Mm. The U.S. government slapped sanctions on both sides in Sudan. That's the Rapid Support Forces and some leaders of the Sudan Armed Forces. And it appears like these sanctions are not biting hard because the two belligerent forces have decided not to sign any ceasefire. Are there other instruments of diplomacy in the toolbox that is yet to be used to bring pressure on these two groups?
Well, it is certainly unfortunate that neither party wants to show up to the negotiating table. It's very hard to come to a resolution when you don't even sit at the table. The other thing that is unfortunate is even if you have sanctions, you know, if you're still able to buy guns and get the weapons into the country, then obviously you need different kinds of teeth and authority. I think we should be looking at the folks who are supplying the arms to the forces, because that is as important as sanctioning both SAF and RSF. And then, as I said, how can you use diplomatic measures to actually divert funds, you know, through other mechanisms, through other agencies, through other platforms, so that civilians and the people in need actually get what they want. But yes, if you don't stop the flow of arms, what are you really doing?
And when Tom Perriello testified to the Foreign Relations Committee here, mm-hmm. I remember what he said. He said, if those who are aiding the war in Sudan are not held accountable, we're doing a zero work. How do you respond to that?
I wholeheartedly agree. And I also think it is very important that the United States ask these actors to compartmentalize their interests. We have an obligation to focus on what is happening in the Sudan. But I want to say I'm grateful that he was actually able to show up. You know, we have not had a full committee hearing in the Foreign Affairs Committee on Africa since the beginning of this term. And we also have a Congress that refused to allow the president of Kenya to speak before Congress. So I don't know about you, but that is the most undiplomatic thing I have seen in a very long time. The fact that we have not had a full hearing on the continent shows me that this Congress, this majority, is not serious about the issue, and that's incredibly unfortunate.
And the last time we heard about famine was 2017. Mm-hmm. And just a month ago, non-governmental organizations, international aid agencies are saying Darfur is at the verge of famine, or there's famine already there. And it appears like those who are supposed to help are holding committee meetings while the house is burning. If you are given an opportunity to speak directly to the people who are making decisions on where aid money should go, what would you tell them?
I would say the world is watching and the world is waiting. And every moment that you do not sit at the table and find a way using any quiver that you have in your toolbox. Every day you wait is a day that someone dies in the Sudan. And this is not something that I am willing to keep on my heart. And this is not something that the United States should let happen. So get off your tuchus and find a way to bring about a ceasefire and to make sure that humanitarian aid is able to get to the Sudan.
That's Sidney Kamlaga-Dove, a member of the Congressional Foreign Relations Committee and Congresswoman representing California's 37th Congressional District. She spoke with me in her office this past hour here in Washington. Still on Sudan, the special envoy of the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, says mediation process for ending the conflict in Sudan should be handed over to the regional bloc to push for lasting peace in the country. Lores Kurbandi says the Jeddah track is the only mediation process accepted by the leaders of the rival forces in the Sudanese conflict.
War situations are not very good ones, and you have the field is still active, war fronts are still active, and massive displacement internally and externally. You have a hunger looming in Sudan. You have killings, and these are very, very bad situations.
What are some of the efforts from the regional bloc to diffuse the tension and, if you like, convince the rival forces to silence the guns?
From the onset of the war, 1 month later, when the war broke out, IGAD participated in the Jeddah meetings as a co-chair. And since that, IGAD is still continuing with the effort to bring about peace in Sudan. You know, Jeddah declaration is having some problems. The implementation is not going as expected. And this has also consequences on the war field, as the ceasefire is not effective. This continues to put difficult situations on civilians and within the Sudan and outside the Sudan in neighboring countries.
The Sudanese have interacted with, I'm talking about civil society activists, former politicians, and the common men and women are saying that the people of Sudan have been forgotten. How do you react to their statements?
Yes, this is correct. I agree with them in terms of humanitarian assistance and also intensive engagement in the areas of particularly letting the parties to stop the war. This one, as compared to Middle East and beyond, I think Sudan needs more of engagement. In our view, the African countries, African Union, we need to do more, because this problem in Sudan is within our continent, and more particularly IGAD, is within IGAD region. The engagement should be at the level of the problem and the suffering of the people in Sudan. This is our hope. We are making our effort to see to it peace prevails to the Sudanese people.
What is your level of engagement with the two belligerent forces? I'm sure your job entails that you speak to both sides. What is your level of engagement with these two groups? I'm talking about RSF and SAF.
Yes, we are engaging ourselves. I'm engaging. But, of course, of late, you know, there were more active in the war fields. And you see, when people are fighting, they have little things to do with negotiation. But we are talking.
If you look at the tracks, the Jeddah track, the Geneva track, the Cairo track, if you like, there were some talks in Addis Ababa also to silence the guns. If you look at these tracks, which track is best suited for the people of Sudan?
You know, any effort that meant to bring peace to Sudan is highly appreciated and will be supported by any means. You know, the first step was the Jeddah Declaration. And for us in Egypt, actually, it is very important. This process of stopping the war has prerequisite for the peace negotiations. It's very important. And implementation of Jeddah facing some difficulties. In our view, the implementation mechanism is missing, and when this one is put in place, you will see some progress in the implementation of Jeddah. Jeddah is all about stopping the war and opening up humanitarian corridors, because without stopping the war, you will not bring people on the negotiating table at all. This is what international community, particularly our region, should exert efforts to see to it that the declaration is implemented.
That's Lawrence Kurbandi, IGAD's special envoy to Sudan. He spoke with me from Addis Ababa on Tuesday. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, families survive floods in South Sudan's Jonglei state. Find out how after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. And our words of wisdom for this Wednesday comes from Unity State.
I'm James Roy Mujok from Unity State, Bantu Town, South Sudan. I have a proverb in my community language that say, Muguru didulun queer here, ano kwalanga madeshoka lep. In English, to castrate a lion is not a problem, but who will open its leg?
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Several families in Bor, displaced by flooding, want the government to support their fishing business. Onyuti Odigo, the National Minister for Fisheries and Livestock, says he is working with United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization to provide fishing equipment to fight food insecurity in the area. For VOA News, Dennis Logonyi reports from Juba.
Residents of Malwal Chat in Bor County have long survived on fishing for their livelihoods, but catches are low after floods submerged the community. About 30 families have struggled to move to higher ground, but it's risky to transport people in their small canoes. Some families remain stuck in flooded areas. Daniel Marial Patrick managed to use a canoe to see his house, which is filled with water. He describes how his fishing business has been affected.
I've been affected because there's no way you can make fish or smoking. The place where we can sit and we will eat, we will sleep, we don't have it. People are very many. We'll give them, the people go and eat. Some of them will return to their purun. And then some of them will be selling catch fresh fish. We will bring food tomorrow, like the maize flour.
Daniel says he used to catch 30 fish a day, but now fish such as tilapia have disappeared. He now gets mad fish.
You can get 20 or 10 or 21, but now when the water is too much, the fish is gone outside. So the big river now is very full in the water. So if you can go there, you get no.
Gifty Mandira works in the fish business, and she says the number of people smoking fish has fallen due to the floods, which has pushed them out of their homes.
A good place for sleeping is not there. People are living on top of anthills where water has not reached. If there is a way, let the waterways be opened so that water can't reach families. If you can see in the place we are staying, children are all in water.
John Manuel is a resident of Pakon Village. He says says, although the floods have brought more fish, they don't have the fishing equipment they need to fight hunger in their village.
All of us here, we don't have net. You know, the net has reached more money. It will take more man, even 5 to 10 man, without finishing it. These are the sources of our income. I request the government and NGOs to supply us or to support us in a time of net.
Onyoti Adigo, the National Minister of Fisheries and Livestock, says his team met with the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization to ask for help for families affected by floods.
During our emergency meeting, that because of food insecurity also, when there is flood, our blood is also a gift because it comes with a lot of fish. So we can look for nets or fishing kits to the communities.
Under the South Sudan Floods Preparedness and Response Plan, at least 2.4 million people in the most vulnerable flood-affected communities will be eligible for humanitarian assistance. An estimated 15% of them are likely to require relocation. According to humanitarian organizations, state governments are to identify safe locations for voluntary movement of people from high-risk flood areas. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
From Juba we go to Eastern Equatoria State, where authorities in Torit say they have arrested criminals suspected of ambushing vehicles along the Kapoita-Torit Road. A security team from Torit Kapoita apprehended the suspects, who will be arraigned in court to answer charges. For VOA News, Vanessa Kaltuma Vanessa reports from Torit.
Cases of ambushes along the Torit Kapoita Road are common, leading to reduced activities by traders and commuters along the main road linking South Sudan to Kenya. Martin Lorikamoy, the commissioner of Kapoita South County, says 13 suspects arrested at Kachipo and another dozen were picked up in Namurunyang village.
There's been a follow-up on those people who make ambushes on the road. Ambush to loot people and ambush for vehicles and hurting people. Some of them even kill people across the four roads, the roads that goes to Kapoita to Torit, from Kapoita to KM15, Kapoita to Ngauro, Kapoita to Nadapal, and Kapoita to Narus. In these four roads is where ambushes are at stake by these criminals.
Moses Matias, the police inspector for Kapoita South, says the arrest will reduce road ambushes and killing of people along the road to Kapoita. He says security forces will continue to comb the area for suspects.
We are still in the procedures and we have captured some. We still want to confirm who are those people and also verify who are the criminals among them. There are many that we caught in the villages. Some may not have hands in the activities. The team is still investigating the names that are with the security team to know that these are the right people.
Commissioner Lorikamoy urged communities along the road where ambushes occur to report the criminals to law enforcement agencies and not to take the law into their hands.
If any attack happen, should be reported to the authorities to know who caused it. Because if the government come in, let them only pick the criminals, not everyone. If communities try to hide the criminals, the government will come for everyone where the incident happened. The community is responsible to identify who the criminals and the government will come and arrest.
Last year, the authorities in Eastern Equatoria State said commercial vehicle traveling from Torit to Kapoita fell into an ambush, resulting in two deaths of a 15-year-old boy and three other sustained injuries. A state government vehicle was also ambushed last year along Torit Kapoita Road at Camp 15. One wildlife warden was killed and four other soldiers were wounded during that ambush. For VOA News, I'm Kaltuma Vanessa reporting from Eastern Equatoria capital, Torit.
from Eastern Equatoria, we move to the United States. During the U.S. presidential debate last night, my colleague Carol Van Damme spoke to several analysts about the performance of the two candidates, Yetunde Odubasan-Omede. He is a professor of global affairs and politics at Framingham State University in New York. She said she thought Vice President Kamala Harris scored a point when she discussed her position on the Israeli-Hamas war.
I think Harris did a good job in explaining what her foreign policy stance is and talking about we need a new generation of leaders and what she would do regarding the Israel and Palestinian war and wanting to have a ceasefire immediately. And her actually also talking to the Palestinian people and saying that, you know, she understands their, you know, their outcry and also their rage and also advocating for a two-state solution.
Now, Mede says Harris said she said things the Palestinian people have been waiting to hear, including things like they deserve self-determination. Just before the debate began, Carol spoke with Republican strategist Charlie Grow, a Pennsylvania Republican who also heads the public affairs company Quantum Communications. Grow said that some political polls that show Harris doing better than former President Donald Trump may be misleading.
Well, the national polls are always going to be a little bit suspect because Republican candidates, including Donald Trump, don't do terribly well nationally. But where they do well are in the states that matter, the so-called battleground states that will form the electoral map that puts you in the White House. And that's where Donald Trump continues to do very, very well, although now the national polls that are out just recently show it essentially a dead heat. I think it is going to be a very, very close election.
You can check out all of VOA's presidential campaign coverage on voanews.com, voaafrica.com, and on all your favorite social media.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
That's all we had on our menu for you this Wednesday, September 11, 2024. We now leave you with Vivian singing about Nyakan. Listening to Vivian singing in her native Cholo language, praising the king of the Shilluk kingdom. Nyikang in Shilluk language is king. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Saida Hamdun, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow again for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Yippee! Yippee! Yippee!